Greg Maddux joins us on Sports Byline. Hall of Fame pitcher who played 23 seasons primarily with the Braves and Cubs, and he won the 1995 World Series while playing with Atlanta. Greg was the first pitcher to win the Cy Young Award four consecutive years, matched only by one other pitcher, Randy Johnson. And during Greg's four Cy Young winning seasons, he had a 75-29 record with a 1.98 ERA while allowing just one base runner per inning. Also, he's the only pitcher to win at least 15 games for 17 straight seasons and holds the record for the most gold gloves by any player with 18. Greg, you now have perspective on your career. What is the most meaningful accomplishment you had in that career?
Ooh, that's a tough question. You know, I think most of it has to do with just the friendships and all the relationships you had as you were playing. You know, I think being out of the game now for 15 years, you know, it's good to reflect back and see your teammates on occasion. You know, in December, I was able to hang around Glavin, Smoltz, and, you know, Wally Joyner and Chipper, all these guys down in Cabo. And I think, you know, the coolest thing is all the friendships that you develop over the years. And obviously, you know, as far as baseball goes, winning that ring in 95 pretty much tops everything.
Your dad was in the Air Force. You spent much of your childhood in Madrid, Spain, and he was the one who exposed you to baseball at an early age. In what way did he do that?
Well, he was a softball pitcher in the Air Force. You know, we were stationed in Torrejon, and we got to watch him pitch softball there against, you know, Army and Navy and all the other branches, Air Force branches. And then he got stationed in here in Vegas at Nellis Air Force Base. And his 20 years were up. He retired. I was about 10 years old when we got to Vegas, and he was my little league coach. I also got to watch him coach my brother as he was in little league. And, you know, that's kind of where it all started. He had a great love for the game. He loved the Reds, so we were Reds fans growing up. He grew up in southern Indiana and was a huge fan of the Big Red Machine back in the 70s, and that's kind of what turned us on to baseball at a young age.
What did he tell you about the game that always stayed with you?
Well, you know what I remember most is when I was about 14, he said, "That's all I know. Now you got to listen to your coaches." And, you know, that was pretty good advice. And then I remember being 21 and I gave up a home run to Dave Parker in Cincinnati. And he told me I should have thrown him a curveball. And I said, "Hey, Pops, remember when I was 14 and you said maybe I should listen to my coaches now?" And we both had a good laugh about it. So, you know, I think what he gave me probably more than anything was the ability to enjoy the game. You know, never pressure to play it. But when we did play it and we had practice, he always seemed to make it fun.
Your brother Mike also became a pro baseball player. And when the two of you came back to the United States, you both trained under Ralph Meter. What was his influence in the way you both developed as players?
Well, Mr. Meter had a philosophy that movement is more important than velocity. Location is more important than velocity. And the ability to change speeds is more important than velocity. But you need it all four to have success. And, you know, he taught a sinking fastball that my brother used. Mike Morgan used it, who was also coached by him at a young age. And, you know, myself. And then he preached location. He preached the ability to change speeds. And you know, then he said it's all about velocity that will get you drafted. But once you get drafted, if you have the foundation of, you know, movement, location, change in speeds, then that's going to last a lifetime.
You know, I was interested. You were a superb, and I mean superb, control pitcher. And yet we hear about guys throwing 98, 99, even over 100 miles per hour. Tell me a little bit about the challenges of power against control.
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody stepped in the batting cage at one time in their life, and the first two pitches seem really, really fast. And after that 10th pitch, it starts to slow down for you. That's kind of what I thought. You know, that's where location comes into play. You know, if a hitter sees a 96 mile an hour fastball enough times in a row, he's eventually going to be able to time it. So you have to be able to change speeds and locate your fastball because, you know, that second, third at bat, they're going to be on your fastball no matter how hard you throw.
Yeah, I know that some baseball scouts were unimpressed by your skinny build, but Chicago scout Doug Mapson saw past that size and he wrote a glowing review that said, "I really believe this boy would be the number one player in the country if only he looked a bit more physical." What was it that most of the scouts did not see in you, Greg?
Size, you know. I think the only thing they saw was velocity. You know, I think, you know, I threw hard in high school. I know people don't realize that, but, you know, I was one of the harder throwers coming out of high school. And, you know, my size, I was 150 pounds, and, you know, size kind of held me back more than anything.
I know you were drafted by the Cubs.
Part.
I know you were drafted by the Cubs in the second round, and you made your major league debut on September the 3rd, 1986. What is it that you remember most about that game?
Well, I remember I came in as a pinch runner. It was Nolan Ryan versus Jamie Moyer, first game, you know, that I got to dress out for. And the game went about 12 or 13 innings, and it got dark at Wrigley. That was pre-lights. And, you know, I came to the park the next morning to resume the game, and the coach said, you know, you might pitch today, so be ready. And they had me warm up, and, like, I don't know what inning it was, 13th or 14th. It was getting late, and they asked me if I was ready. And, you know, we only had one out in the inning, so I had two more outs to get ready. So I go, yeah, I'm ready. And they put me in the pinch run at second. So I went from the bullpen to second base to pinch run, and I didn't score. And I'm sitting on the bench thinking that was kind of stupid. I don't know why they put me in the game or why they had me warm up if I was just going to pinch run. And my coach told me, hey, you're on the mound, you're pitching. And that was when I learned what a double switch was, my first game in the big leagues.
Your first pitching start, though, was pretty special and unique. It was against the Phillies, and tell everybody why it was so special and unique.
Well, I believe my first start was against the Reds, and a start or two later, I got to face the Phillies, and obviously that was my brother's team, and he was starting for the Phillies that day. So we were the first two rookie brothers to square off against one another in a game, and it was a very special day. You know, we were both happy to be in the big leagues, and then to get a chance to face one another was pretty special.
You know, there was a difference between your first full season in the majors in 1987, you were 6-14, and your second season in which you went 18-8. And, you know, I'm just wondering, what was the difference between those two seasons? What changed for you that you got so much success that second season?
Well, the biggest difference is I learned how to pitch slower better. My changeup improved dramatically after my first year in the big leagues. You know, I'd had a pretty good changeup coming up through the minor leagues, and for some reason in the big leagues, I wasn't throwing it correctly. And I went to winter ball after the season, threw 100 innings in Venezuela, and really worked on, you know, my changeup, slider, curveball, my secondary pitches. And, you know, my fastball was good enough. I just wasn't pitching slow well enough, so I had to learn how to pitch slower.
In Atlanta, you had that starting rotation of you, Tom Glavine, Steve Avery, and John Smoltz, and I don't know that I've ever seen a more complimentary starting rotation. What made it so?
That was a good one. Well, you know, Glavine, Smoltz are in the Hall of Fame, so you had two Hall of Fame pitchers pitching beside you, and Steve Avery was better than all three of us. You know, had he have stayed healthy, you know, he had some injury issues you know, right when he was about to be one of the premier pitchers in the game. And, you know, they were just very good. You know, we had four aces on one staff. So it was pretty special.
One of the things I've observed in covering sports over the years, particularly in baseball, when you have a pitching staff like that, they motivate each other. Am I correct in that observation? And what were the little things that each of you motivated each other?
Well, I think just being around each other on a day-to-day basis, you know, I think we learned a different way to do the same thing. You know, if you look at me and Glav, Smoltz, and even Avery, we all did it in our own way. And just being able to sit the sit on the bench during games and talk about hitting philosophies and what the hitters are trying to do, I think really helped our game plan when it was our day to pitch.
You mentioned how special that World Series championship was. The 95 World Series against the Indians was a very interesting one. I remember the whole series. Tell me, though, about game number one, because it was you against Oral Hershiser. You pitched 9 innings, 2 hits, no walks, no earned runs. And, of course, the Braves went on to win that World Series. But tell me about that first game against Oral Hershiser.
Well, it was just, you know, I just remember it was very nerve-wracking. You know, that was my first World Series game ever. And, you know, you get butterflies, you know, the first inning or two, and eventually they go away. But I was out there in the 9th inning, and the butterflies never went away. I mean, it was, you know, I don't know how many pitches I threw, but it was over 100 pitches of, you know, you just grinding it out, and you're nervous, and you're trying not to make a mistake because you know Oral's going to pitch good. You know, it's one of those games you know you're going to have to win 1-0 or 2-1. It's going to be a close game, and, you know, we came out on top that day. It was a very special day, and glad finished it up. Game 6 with a shutout, and, you know, I can still remember Marquise Grissom running down in the left center and catching that fly ball from Carlos Baerga. It was a pretty special time.
You had 355 career victories, 4 Cy Young Awards, a World Series championship, and when you walked off the mound for the very last time in 2008, what sense of satisfaction did you have, Greg, in what you had accomplished in the game?
Well, you know, I think that it took a few years to set in, but, you know, I remember my last game in 08. It was a playoff game against the Phillies, and I knew I was going to retire at the end of the year. I didn't announce anything yet, but I knew I was done. You know, I just remember walking off the field, and I asked the umpire for a ball so I could have a game ball from that last game. And, you know, I got it up in my Dig Me room upstairs, and, you know, very special time. You know, I realized I had played longer than I ever thought I could play and gotten more out of the game than I ever expected. And it was, I was done. I was ready to retire.
Yeah, it's interesting about retirement. I've talked to a lot of athletes about that process of deciding to walk away from the game that they had played for a long time and just simply loved. And for you, I mean, it started in your childhood and everything. Was it a hard, hard decision, or was it a reality that you knew the right time?
It was a reality. I think, you know how you always want to play one more year? I did that for 3 years, my last 3 years. And, you know, I was in Dodger Stadium, and, you know, I threw this fastball, and it came out good. I mean, I gave it everything I had, and it was a perfect pitch. It popped the glove. Everything was right about it, and I looked up on the scoreboard, and it said 82 miles an hour. And I went, oh, it might be time to go. I mean, it was, you know, if you play golf and you hit that perfect tee shot and you go, I can't hit it any further than that, it was kind of one of those fastballs where it was, you know, it was just a perfect pitch. But, you know, I lacked the velocity to have any kind of success after that.
You mentioned about hitting a ball, and I've often been wondering why particularly baseball players play baseball and then, you know, go on and play golf. And I had one of athlete tell me the reason why I do that is because it's the only ball I can hit that doesn't move. And I guess there's some reality in that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty hard to swing and miss when you're golfing. I'm not saying it's never happened, but you know, and it's fun. You know, it's a way to, you know, like you retire and you go to the golf course, and now these guys are your teammates now. You know, you got your group of, you know, 8 to 12 guys that you play with on a daily basis, and these guys kind of turn into your teammates now.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking about your career, but I've got something else to talk to you about because you're involved with the Invited Celebrity Classic. This is a great tournament, and you'll be able to watch it live on the Golf Channel all 3 days. This is a tournament that drives $500,000 to charity, and it's got some great names associated with it, not only the PGA Tour champion professionals, but people like Tony Romo, Albert Pujols, John Smoltz, and Greg Maddux is playing in that tournament as well. I mentioned about making the transition from baseball to golf. There is a lot of downtime in golf, and you need to really focus. How hard is that to do instead of being involved in a game that has more action?
Well, golf's fun. You know, baseball was your job. It's what you did for a living. You understood it. You know, that's all you thought about, you know, as you were going through a season. You know, golf is a way to get out and have fun and relax and enjoy the guys you're playing with, enjoy the golf course, enjoy Mother Nature sometimes. You know, it's just, and you're always battling against yourself. You know, golf's one of those games where, you know, one guy could shoot 90 and have the greatest day in the world, and the guy next to you could shoot 75 and want to break clubs. So, you know, you kind of face your own demons in golf, and it's fun to try to crack the code every day, and it's nice getting out of the house and getting around the guys and enjoying the course.
What about this tournament? Tell me a little bit about this tournament and why you enjoy it so much.
Well, I enjoy it because there's golf and then there's tournament golf, and it's two totally different things. And you find out the golf you play in your own backyard is pretty easy compared to tournament golf. You know, when you go and you play in tournament golf, it seems like it just gets a lot harder. You know, the course is a lot harder. You got to deal with the wind in Texas. And, you know, it's just a lot harder. And, you know, you try to see if you got any better from last year, whether or not you did. I guess we'll find out at the end of the tournament.
And again, I want to remind you about the Invited Celebrity Classic. You'll be able to watch it on the Golf Channel all 3 days. And if you're in that part of the country, you may want to check it out April 19th to the 21st at Las Colinas Country Club in Irving, Texas. And it's all for a very, very worthwhile purpose. It's $500,000 for charity. And I want to thank you, Greg. I mentioned to you before we got started, the last time you and I had talked was in 2002. It's been too long. I have such respect for you, but one of the things I always remember about you when I was ever around you when you were in Atlanta, you were always so thoughtful and very kind with people. It was part of your nature. And I think you were talking about not throwing the ball at 98 miles an hour. I think your determination and your control over the talents that you had was probably a big reason for your success. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think location makes you smart, that's for sure. You know, location will cover up bad pitch selection, and great stuff will cover up bad pitch selection. And, you know, you got to have one of the two to have success.
Greg, I want to thank you. Please come back and join me again on Sports Byline. Take care.
All right, thanks for having me.
Again, Greg Maddux, Hall of Fame pitcher who played 23 seasons, primarily with the Braves and the Cubs, and he won the 1995 World Series championship with Atlanta, and he was the first pitcher to win the Cy Young Award 4 consecutive years, matched only by another pitcher, Randy Johnson, and boy, he was a good one. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.